Greetings, fellow officers and friends of Starfleet. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and this is Future Imperfect. And I realize it's been a little while since our last show, but trust me, guys, you're going to love this one. But I'm joined with the co-creator of the Geekcast Radio Network,
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And I love how we get a chance to work with these two. These guys are some of my favorite series over at thatguyatheglasses.com. We are joined by that sci-fi guy and his associate, number one officer,
Nick Wright.
How's it going, guys?
It is going well. It is nice to get everyone back together once again with not having huge power losses, being trapped in the transporter, or simply gorging myself on replicator rations. It is nice to be back here on the show. So last time, guys, we looked at the captains of Star Trek and then the ships of Star Trek. This episode is going to be more of a roundtable just because, well, it's a topic that's worth discussing simply because, well, we're getting near, another movie year with J.J. Abrams, and I think they're wrapping principal photography quite soon on Star Trek 2. And that brings up a question that seems to happen every couple of years. Why is there no new Star Trek on television? So we're here to talk about why there needs to be a Star Trek, or maybe why there doesn't need to be a Star Trek on TV right now. But first, a couple of housekeeping notes. As you guys know, we are sponsored by Starfleet, SFI.org, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club, for all their wonderful support. Actually, I need to get back into my Starfleet Academy courses. I've kind of slacked off in the last month or two, and I was taking Borg 101 and I think something on warp drive, and I'm actually not kidding when I say this. They actually have a really cool section where you can take courses. They'll send you certificates that can help you rank up. I think I'm still Crewman Dodd on the USS Hadfield, which is the flagship of the fleet. So I got a really cool posting right out of the gate. And I've heard back from our friends, over at ThinkGeek.com. We're having some border issues. Evidently, trying to import Romulan ale is not a good thing, and people are pissy. So I have to deal with the Canadian-US borders and customs people before we can get some more stuff here on the replicator. So we do apologize for that. And finally, before we get into our discussion, we will not have an L-Cars segment this week. As Steve put it, and I think this is quite accurate, this conversation is going to be pretty much self-sustaining anyway. And kind of the genesis for this show, I guess we'll start off the conversation now, is about a couple of months ago, back in April, there was an article over on the HuffingtonPost.com where our very own Steve Saylor does some writing over there. And it was by Chris Lopesto. And he wrote 53 reasons why we need a new Star Trek TV series. And it got me and Steve talking off air thinking, well, why the hell isn't there a new Star Trek? I mean, the J.J. Abrams movie went over well. So I guess let's start going around the circle. We'll start with Steve, go to Leo, and then we'll go to Nick. Why does there need to be a new Star Trek series on television? And we'll see where the conversation evolves. Steve, start us away.
Well, I think that, well, especially today, I mean, there's not that many sci-fi shows on TV. I mean, it's mostly reality, or it's mostly like some kind of a stupid drama that is ultimately nothing intelligent. And I think that part of the problem is, and it's done best for sci-fi anyway, having a Star Trek television show. I think that the reason why no other sci-fi show lasts as long is because it's kind of hard to compare with the Star Trek franchise, which, you know, from the 80s kind of kept on going through the mid 2000s before finally getting the shaft.
Yeah, and that ended with Enterprise, I think, back in 2004, if I'm not mistaken, right, guys?
It was like 2004, 2005, but to say the least, I mean, it's Star Trek, and it had nothing to do with Enterprise. I mean, everybody gives it the rap of the one that killed the franchise, but it's actually not that. It's just things got stagnant. Paramount got done with it. Their last movie bombed. I mean, it was just they were done with it. So, I mean,
there was also a change of regime in Paramount at the time. And they looked at it, and, you know, kind of just coming in with fresh eyes going, oh, that show is expensive.
And, like any sci-fi show.
Yeah, like, you know, it cost a bit, yes. So they were just looking to...
Just to kind of give it the axe, so to speak?
Yeah, and that's part of the way, like, the fourth season of that show was able to still be made, was they found corner-cutting techniques. Like, in the fourth season, instead of doing green screen for the stars on the flyby, they just did projections.
Wow, like, I did
not know we can save that. Money that way, you know?
I think halfway through the props, they started using the Art Asylum toys for the phasers because they looked better.
Yeah.
So there's yet another cost-cutting move. And hell, actually, even Doctor Who for a while was using, the toys were so good, they could use the Sonic Screwdriver on screen, and if it wanted to be the toy, it was the same scale.
Right.
But, so there's another little bit of random trivia there for you. We're thinking cost cutting is probably a reason why there is no Trek on TV now. Leo, go ahead.
I would say that's the fate of a lot of sci-fi on television.
Now, so you don't think it has so much to do with there being fan support? You think it just comes down to money?
I think a lot of times it does. I mean, that and studio politics and et cetera, et cetera.
You know, and it kind of blows my mind because you have stations that are dedicated towards sci-fi television, such as the Sci-Fi Network,
right.
and yet anything
that nobody picks it up.
Yeah, it looks like crap, or yeah, no one picks it up, or for whatever reason, the good sci-fi shows get a really big budget and then they just drop off. I mean, good examples for this year, Fox. They had what was it, Alcatraz? Interesting idea, cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Terra Nova. Somehow that got a full season. And Fringe barely managed to get renewed for a fifth and final season. I think it's only because the fans got so much to say. And I find there's less anti-Fox bullshit nowadays. I think they're finally starting to listen. But then again, they do have canceled some good shows before.
See, Fox is an anomaly to me. The amount of science fiction shows that they green light and let run and then cancel. Like, there's so much, like, this... There's two people at Fox that hate each other, and the one guy's going, I'm going to get this show. It looks awesome. And the other guy's like, oh, I'm going to kill it.
I'm waiting. I see you coming.
You know, it really wouldn't surprise me. And it really takes the piss out of me that Fox gets so many good sci-fi properties. For example, say what you will, I think Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles was fantastic. It just needed
some of the best television
ending.
On some of the best television.
Yeah.
It has some episodes that are not that great, and mostly mid-season two, but like the episodes that are good are like amazing.
Absolutely. And then they also are infamous for canceling Firefly.
Yeah.
And then Buffy got moved off Buffy went to their station to continue after having a stint over on another network whose name escapes me at the current moment. And they had Angel. So it's not like they're not friendly towards weirder shows. I mean, these are the guys that I think made sci-fi considered legitimate for a long time in the fact that they had a show like, say, The X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Although The Lone Gunman was cut tragically short at 13 episodes, but that's a story for a different day.
Interesting. They actually even seem like they learned their lesson about Firefly because they brought back Dollhouse back, and you know, they didn't even know if they're going to have another season or not, so they didn't really do much planning. And then, oh well, we got another season, and then I guess that's all we get.
And I think that show ended on kind of a lackluster note too, didn't it?
Right. Yeah, it did.
Which I guess that seems to be the fate of a lot of sci-fi. I mean, I remember a show I used to watch on Fox. I think it was called Space 1999: Above and Beyond.
Yeah.
And that ended lame. And we look at sci-fi nowadays, and I think one of the best examples of a fantastic sci-fi show with a great cast, it doesn't necessarily have to have a huge budget, but it looks huge budget, was Battlestar Galactica. Because it had just the strength of the characters carried the series. And I think that showed a shift towards television where you could tell legitimate stories without getting caught on the high tech, which I think where Star Trek maybe had some problems. I mean, you got a lot more character development in Battlestar than you ever did in Star Trek, and I'll fight that point to the death.
I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, you got more I mean, you felt. I honestly, I think you feel more for Admiral Adama as opposed to Captain Picard.
With exception, I mean, for a lot of times Star Trek, you have that the end of the episode resets to zero because you got multiple writers working on it, and you can't have this person's episode mess up this person's episode, and it works better when you've got like a team of writers working towards a
common goal, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that Star Trek could definitely take advantage of now, because people, I think, are ready for that more mature, story-driven, basically that medium of television. And to refer back to the article that we're talking about from the Huffington Post, which Steve will link in the artwork, or sorry, in the actual episode post to know what we're actually talking about. One of the things that I like about it is, I think I'm just trying to find the reason here. Number 15 on out of 53 reasons is because Star Wars is officially embarrassing. Star Trek finally has the chance to become hip. And the Abrams reboot definitely proved that.
That's true.
I'll go with that. I mean, they really could. I mean, and there's so many directions they could go with it. I mean, a lot of times, like I said, studios get worried about, oh, we can't have this one franchise mess up this other franchise, because, you know, and that happened with Smallville being about Superman. Like, they wanted that show to be about Batman, and they were like, oh, I don't know, we got these Batman movies that's really successful, and they're like, okay, well, then we'll do Superman, I guess. And they always try to get Bruce on the show, but they're like, oh, no, we don't want to mess up these movies. So I almost wonder if they would have the same kind of opinion, like, oh, these movies, oh, I don't know, that first movie did really good, a series could mess it up. So, but I mean, so go completely different, go in the far future where the Federation has collapsed and there's a civil war, or I don't know. Yeah, there's so much you could do with it.
Yeah, and the fact that the Star Trek, the most recent movie, gave us a logical way out. It split the timeline.
Now, I had an interesting conversation with someone about that recently. I agree, it was a split timeline, but when has that ever happened in Star Trek? Whenever time travel or any kind of thing is, it alters the prime line, the prime timeline. Like yesterday's Enterprise, something happened, everything changed. When has Star Trek ever followed a split timeline?
Yeah, and then
that is true.
And then it's happened
numerous times in the series, and that's it's always left something kind of different, and yet somehow it's kind of resetted by the end, but it's still an alternate timeline.
So it'd be the same, but you know, Guinan would have a different colored hat.
I mean, it erased the old timeline and became the new. There was no split alternate thing. Like, that's how Star Trek operates. And, you know, anyone in the comments, I name an example of when it didn't, because that's interesting to me.
Yeah, because, oh, man. Yeah, I never even considered the fact that they could just say, nope, didn't happen, or whatever.
So, with the new Star Trek movie, the only thing that is now canon is Enterprise.
Yeah, because in like
First Contact, I guess.
And with like Enterprise, they even had their problems, because I remember my friend Justin from who's worked with us before for our PAX episodes was telling me in Enterprise they come to a point where someone says this timeline isn't right because there is no giant scar across Earth from the Zindi.
Yeah.
And that still exists, and like, what the hell? So I think a new Star Trek could very well take place within its own continuity. I think it would be best if they stayed in the Abrams verse, because that's what's doing well right now. And it'd be interesting just to see other characters, because they've already talked about Klingons, they've talked about Romulans in it. So there's a chance to flesh out that universe and build a new fan base, because like number 15 says, Star Wars is officially embarrassing now. Star Trek is at a unique point where it has an established fan base, and they're open to reinterpretations. We didn't boycott the movie or anything.
Do we think that the logical point would be, you know, since the original series crew members are all cast now, obviously you can't get them for a TV show, would we go into Next Gen?
I think we could stay within the old Enterprise, or within that era and simply mention them every so often, or maybe if they have the time, film one episode where they have significant cameos, or maybe like a television movie.
Perhaps a different crew that could, you know, interact and maybe on a space station where they stop by.
Yeah,
you're such a DS9 fanboy.
The thing is, there's so many possibilities open to it that I don't understand why television executives have not tried. Now, before the new Abrams movie came out, Jonathan Frakes, who we know as Commander Riker, he's produced a number of television shows and even directed a lot on TNG and did some stuff for the Roswell television show. Think of that what you will. But Paramount said no, and CBS said no.
Well, and they've continuously said no, because there's been multiple people, like Frakes wanted to do something with it. They've had Bryan Singer and Brian Fuller wanting to come in and make a new Star Trek, and, you know, they've told them, you know, hell no. And then
see, Michael Dorn actually wants to make he said a low budget Star Trek movie, either a direct to video or direct to cable.
Was it a movie or a series?
Movie.
Oh.
With Worf as captain on the frontier fighting people like, grah!
That could be really awesome.
Could be.
Depending on how they handle it. Yeah. Kickstarter, man. Come on. It seems to work for everybody else.
Yeah, and it also kind of sounds like...
I was going to say, as far as that list is concerned with the top 53, most of those are just BS anyway.
But some of them do have some very good points. For example,
some of them do have good points. However, I do think what killed the series initially is the fact that it got too technical for people.
Yeah.
And was less about the story and the cast as, you know, and pretty much you can kind of equate that to after Roddenberry left, you know, left us. I mean, it's, he was the driving force of Star Trek, and that, when you could kind of think that things went more technical and more into, you know, tech driven story or cast driven. I think that over the years of passing between all the multiple hands, I think that's what killed the series and the interest in it. And that's probably why they don't want to get back in that rut again.
Well, it's almost like each series has its own theme, and I can't remember whether we talked about this on one of our past episodes, but it's like certain series follow a formula, and the really concrete example I can think of this is in Voyager, technology solves every problem. And you look at something like TNG, diplomacy solves every problem. In the original show, war solves problems, and I guess you saw the fallacies of Captain Archer, willing to learn solves problems.
Seems like it's all driven by the captain, because Janeway was a scientist before she became a captain, and Picard was, you know, he's always had his great hand at diplomacy, and Sisko was just really pissed off.
Angry black man in space, but I love that show. And, you know, it's just, I think that a new Star Trek show now, especially now, looking at the world that we live in, seeing all the good and horrible things that are happening out there, there's a chance to tell some new interesting stories. And the fact that Star Trek is such a respected name in bringing people up to speed on things or telling stories that other shows won't. Like, thinking back to the 60s with Star Trek, how they had the black and white...
first interracial kiss.
Yeah, they had that. Yeah. They had the black and white people episode where that was more or less about racism and stuff like that. So thinking about this, there's one on this list, and I would really like to see this. I'm a big supporter of the community. The first openly gay Starfleet captain.
Sure.
That would be a wonderful risk, and I think you'd bring in a whole new realm of viewers. I'm not saying do it for the same reasons that, say, Marvel and DC are doing it right now, but it could be a legitimately good story hook. Because we've seen males, we've seen females. Why not have a guy who's openly gay?
I always thought the next step would be alien, but, you know, that works too. That brings it home.
Yeah, he could be a gay alien for all we know.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many possibilities out there. And if you wanted to hit a younger crowd, and I almost wonder what this would do. I think this would be more akin to a web series. Starfleet Academy.
Ah.
which, sure, once again, could be a cool idea for a franchise. But you look at all these teeny bopper shows, I would fear Starfleet Academy may go down the realm of, say, Smallville.
Probably, but they're the ones who, like, you know, they're making their money on, so got nothing to complain about as long as they work in some decent stuff.
Yeah, and I guess that's a question to the panel here. What kind of stories does a new Star Trek series need to tell to remain relevant and to draw people in?
Well, I think that, I mean, it definitely helps. Like you said, doing it in the Abrams verse, because part of the reason the old show got stale, really, was that, like, they kind of felt tied, like, they had to cross-reference everything and make sure they didn't mess up continuity this way, and, like, they still did. But, like, they spent so much time worrying about that they kind of are free to tell more, like, you know, tell the basic, you know, the base stories, you know, the seven base stories, really.
At some point, we're going to have to explore other parts of the Star Trek universe and just kind of take the chance of having a different type of show set in that universe. Like, I was thinking, you know, I liked House. I would like to see, you know, maybe a Star Trek medical show, something different. Yeah. Give it some different options. The Starfleet Academy thing, be like, what, Degrassi in space? Or
I want to see something like Band of Brothers in space.
Mm.
Like a fleet of Starfleet Marines.
Or how about this, Section 31?
There you go.
I like Section 31 a lot.
See, I really like the books of that, so I mean, I could get behind that whole way because it's like a, you know, like an almost 24 Star Trek.
Now, with that in mind, do you think they could update that to the Abrams verse to still draw new fans and old fans alike?
Oh, yeah. I think
the concepts are pretty basic. I mean, you know, the idea of an Illuminati is present within all, you know, all of...
It's lingering beneath the surface everywhere.
Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily have to be the Romulans as the bad guys every week, or the Tholians or whatever.
It could be anything.
Which I think that's something else about Star Trek that I think part of the show got stale to, is it would depend a lot on the aliens. And me and Steve just did a show with our other friend, Mike Blanchard, and we were talking about Star Trek and Star Wars versus. And one of the points that me and Steve brought up is Star Trek has more capable villains, but they're not as memorable as Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
For example, who looks cooler, Khan or Darth Vader? It's not a hard comparison, unfortunately. But right. Star Trek villains get shit done. I mean, say what you will about Nemesis. Nero trashed the Enterprise. Or not Nero. Shinzon trashed the Enterprise. Nero took out fucking Vulcan.
Yeah. And the entire Starfleet, other than the Enterprise.
So, you know, what did Vader do? Well, okay, he killed the Jedi, kind of, with a million stormtroopers. I could do the exact same friggin' thing. You know, you fire a million shots, a few are bound to hit.
Throw the stormtroopers at them. Shoot a stormtrooper cannon.
it's simple numbers, people.
But like, as far as the show concepts, I mean, there's many different ways they could take this. I honestly would like to see them kind of, you know, I wouldn't have a problem if they based it off of like the Abrams formula of the film, because that would give it the nice kind of blend and meshing of story, character, and tech, but not too tech heavy, to where the general audience won't watch it because it's, you know, focusing on that.
30% fewer lens flares. 30%, yeah, though. That's okay. Like, I'm okay with that.
But they wouldn't be able to afford that on TV budget. But but I could see them, lens flare. I could see them doing like a Section 31 or focusing on a different crew because, I mean, let's face it, we've gotten pretty much the Enterprise jammed on our throat since the 60s. Mm. You know, so... Not that I have a problem with that. I do love the fact that they keep going back to that, but I do think that they need to take it in somewhat of a different direction rather than just the Enterprise lineage. And, I mean, hell, they could jump, you know, massively in the future, or they could do, you know, jump somewhere in the Abramsverse. Or, I mean, there's plenty of directions they can take it.
I really like the idea that Nick had of the medical show. That could be really cool. You could go all kinds of directions with that. Like,
but I mean, you got to think about it this way too. There's so many medical shows on TV right now that it would get washed out. I mean,
but alien medical.
Yeah, true. I mean, but where can you get that?
But house still, with people, phasers. People have a hard time watching, you know, shows with like supernaturalistic stuff with doctor shows. I mean, that gifted man got canned. I mean, granted, it's kind of a different concept altogether, but it's still, it's something different than the typical medical show, and it didn't last because of it.
I think you could blend the medical thing with another concept. For example, I can't remember who mentioned this, but if we did a civil war set in the far future, have,
I was gonna say that again.
Yeah, have the doctor be a lead character, much like on Voyager, because Voyager told a number of different medical stories.
That's true.
So there's no reason why we couldn't do that and still incorporate elements of, say, Section 31. I mean, I think a Civil War gives you a chance to really explore things because you don't have to have the peace and calm that you more or less had in TNG. Because when you think about it, the Federation was at war a few times there, but you never saw anything super large scale outside of the Battle of Wolf 359. Mm-hmm. And maybe one or two encounters with the Borg. I mean,
or yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah, so there wasn't really anything huge there. With setting it in the far future, you can, I guess, you can kind of take it along the same lines as they're doing with Star Trek Online, and just saying things are fucked up, guys.
Yeah,
we need to fix this.
As far as I understood, and this is one of those violations to that rule, kind of, was Star Trek Online, supposedly, as far like before it came out, I don't know if it's held true to this, said that it was taking place in the original timeline where Romulus had been destroyed, but in that future.
Well, what happened, I mean...
It was after Spock left, after Data came back, and he's on the Enterprise as captain now. I mean, it's in the early 25th century, so, I mean, there's still all different kinds of hell breaking loose, and just from what little bit I've read here or there, but, I mean, it's still... I wouldn't mind them going to that, because then that would give a chance for the older Trek actors to jump back in and have a chance at the series just as guest cameo roles. And then they could still do something with Section 31 and medical and, you know, all that different kind of stuff, because you got that much war and strife going on. You're going to need, you know, like maybe episodes on engineers of Starfleet and, you know, just different facets of Starfleet command.
Yeah. Now, we've talked a fair chunk about why there should be a new Star Trek show. We've got kind of established what our premise would be. Now let's flip the coin. Let's turn things over. Let's play the role of evil television executives. And people that hate sci-fi and all that's good and kick puppies on their way down the street. Why shouldn't there be a new Star Trek on television?
Well, like you said...
Money.
You got a good film franchise going right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to mess that up.
But could a television show survive that? For example, look at the X-Files and fight the future.
Well, let's put it this way. Think about it. Every time, let's just use Transformers or G.I. Joe, for example.
Yeah.
Every time a movie comes out and there's a television series, they shaft the television series in favor of the film.
Basically just make it a long commercial for the film.
Well, and then when the film goes out, well, I mean, they're not even related. They're not even directly related.
Oh, okay.
Transformers had, like, and I know this is off topic, but it's still the same concept. They had Transformers Animated, went 3 seasons, they shafted it, even though there was still room for a season 4, in order to have Revenge of the Fallen. Then they, after that film was over, they, you know, proceeded to into Transformers Prime, but I mean that's still going. But G.I. Joe, like, they canceled the new series, didn't even make it past a season in favor of the film that got delayed till next year. So
they've got this weird paranoid thing about you can't have this and this at the same time.
But
it confuses
Paramount.
People.
But it's,
I mean, no, it's a studio thing. It's just, that's just the way they are. It's
and,
like,
and,
And it's really weird in comic book movies because it's like, oh, I've never heard of two versions of a character existing at the same time. That's crazy talk.
And they're doing that with all the Marvel stuff now. They're doing it with, you know, the DC stuff. They're starting to, if it's not directly related to the film series, then they're just like, oh, no, we can't have anything to do with this because people will get confused. Well, no, it's like comparing apples to oranges of the same, you know, franchise, but it's, you know, it's... I could see it going either way as far as the having a new Star Trek show and the film, but also the budget is going to have to be monumental. And most of the time, these stupid television series or television stations, they don't want to spend money. So that's why we have all these stupid reality shows.
Right. Yeah. They're cheap to produce.
Yeah. Which is funny. I posted something on my Facebook today and it was comparing Firefly and the Jersey Shore. Quite the juxtaposition, I'm sure. Firefly gets canceled after one season or not even. Somehow Jersey Shore is five and still going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no God. My stupidity. And that's what boggles my mind is why society would, you know, I mean, granted they do nothing but watch TV anymore, but, they'd rather watch something mindless and stupid.
I think they would rather see people who are more stupid than them versus people who are smarter than them, which is why they can't stand the technobabble.
Well, my wife freaking hates Star Trek, and she loves Star Wars, but she liked the new Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah, which, my wife is the same way, which is kind of weird.
Well, which speaks volumes. I mean, if we could get a series that was, and as my wife puts it, they're always in that damn room, which, you know, to me means the bridge.
Right.
Which, you know, that's true because of budgetary issues. But if they could focus less of, yeah, I mean, look at the Abrams Star Trek. Yeah, it was on the bridge, but most of it didn't take place there. So, I mean, if they could get that kind of dynamic into a show, it would probably help more in terms of viewers because, like, somebody that doesn't like Star Trek, that's not going to attract them to a new show.
Definitely the idea of a show that maybe doesn't even take place on a ship. I mean, yeah, I'm a Deep Space Nine fan, but I mean, you know, do something different.
On a planet, maybe?
Maybe a Star Trek colony.
Yeah!
Sure.
You could be like the Maquis and shit. Hey, there, once again, plays into the Civil War aspect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, definitely a new angle and something that the studios can make cheap.
If they did it on a planet, like, I mean, think kind of Terra Nova, but with Star Trek. I think if you mix the concept of, you know, that home world thing, I think that could work probably better than how Terra Nova was going.
Mm-hmm. I think another reason, and this may be just me thinking strange media, whatever. I think another reason why a Star Trek show might be hard to put on air is it's hard to have sponsored. Mm. Think about how many product drops you see in television shows these days. And that's a very important thing because, like, if Coke says, hey, we'll give you $2 million, you put this in your movie, right? And Star Trek, I'm not sure the Federation has Pepsi. I'm just saying.
Well, Kirk's car that he stole had that Nokia, so.
Yeah, but admittedly, that's probably pretty hard to squeeze in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and it looked like it was shoehorned in anyway, so.
So.
Or
like Battleship and the Hasbro thing.
And Coke Zero? Suddenly I want a Coke Zero.
I forgot about that. But yeah, there's just, I wonder if maybe people aren't ready for a Star Trek now, because I think part of the thing is, like I said, the Abrams movie was very successful, but the toys sold like shit. So, and that's another thing too. You have to remember, Star Trek, as much as we love it and it's an intellectual show and we love the stories it tells, blah 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 blah, it's a marketing tool too. And if we've noticed it doesn't sell well in terms of toys, Star Trek Online is free to play now. That's not a good sign either.
No.
So you have to look at it from those angles.
But so is WoW, so is DC Universe. I mean,
WoW is only free to play to for the first 20 levels.
And WoW is 10 years old.
It's still free. up until that point. And you have DC Universe, and they have a bunch of, you know, DC shows, and they still market well.
And they've also, DC has theirs sectioned off into, like, people who spend money and people who don't, levels of what you can do with your account.
Yeah, because, like, you can buy, like, everybody gets the game free basic, but you don't get access to the Green Lantern stuff or the Last Laugh stuff. So if you want it to be really awesome, you have to pay for it.
Is Star Trek, do they have, like, that kind of model?
You can buy additional stuff, too, as well, but it's, you still have to be leveled up a fair chunk to even use them.
Right.
Which means you have to invest the time. So,
but if you're somebody that doesn't play, like, to pay to play games, that's not going to bother you.
Yeah, it's not really going to bother you. I mean, you can earn most things in that game normally. But
they just give you extra slots, mostly, and that's, you know...
Extra slots, maybe some crew. Or some cooler shit for your ship or whatever. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I think the reason why DC has such a greater latitude... The Dark Knight and Batman Begins. Because think about it. Superman Returns sucked. Catwoman sucked. DC was a hurting brand for an awful long time. And it's only in the last 5-6 years, I think, they've really come back. I mean, Superman Doomsday was not a lot of people like that, but a lot of people liked everything that's followed past that.
DC Animated has been solid for a long time. I mean, Mask of the Phantasm. I mean, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, you know... Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, you know, DC Animated has been great for a long time.
But at the same time, there hasn't been a theatrical release since Mask of the Phantasm.
No.
The last one that was supposed to get theatrical release was Return of the Joker, and that got shafted because of the 9/11 event. They didn't want anything kind of gory because it was like, oh, we kill them, you know, even though it had nothing to do with the event. So they just direct-to-DVD'd it. But those are the DC Animated Universe, and the other ones are the DC Original Movies, which are completely different. But
you were mentioning, like, the Abrams toys not selling very well. That's part of the reason why Green Lantern is not completely off the table. Green Lantern, the movie, may not have done all that well,
but the toys,
but the toys were selling like hotcakes,
which is really sad because those toys were not well made.
Well, I mean, they made a lot of different toys, and it wasn't just the action figures, but I mean, like, all the Green Lantern stuff was selling like crazy. So, I mean, they spent a lot of money, like, in brand awareness on that franchise and selling the merchandise. So,
well, I think as DC had a plan to make their stuff because they knew they got people's attention with Batman. Hey, guys, don't forget, we're doing this thing too. And with Star Trek, a lot of people that are fans of the show, we've seen the older stuff. I mean, I think what they want to do is capture the new 18 to 35 crowd. Like, we're talking past, like, let's say they want to attract people born 1990 and up. That's, I think, because they have the most disposable income, at least as far as I understand. Whereas people like us, I mean, we're all probably around the age of, like, 30, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we just have to remember that, we're not the target audience anymore, which is kind of unfortunate, but what are you going to do about it? And I understand we lost Steve, so we'll give him a minute to come back. Otherwise, we'll figure it out. Moving on with the show, so to speak. I don't know. I mean, where do you think we need, like, if someone were to pitch a project to you? Okay, actually, hold on. Here's how we're going to play this game. We're going to call this the pitch game. So it's going to be Nick, you, and Steve. You guys are going to pitch a Star Trek series to me right now. And I'm going to tell you why it may not succeed. And we'll see if this is a logical assumption.
Okay, well, apparently we, from our discussion earlier, we came up with a Star Trek show that's set in the far future when the Federation is at civil war, and we're following a medical group that's being shadowed by Section 31.
So we'll call it MASH NCC 4077, and it's behind enemy lines. Yeah, I mean, if I was to pitch one, I mean, I think I basically, for a while there, I was kind of holding out hope in my geeky heart of hearts that we might be able to see some kind of Star Trek plus Joss Whedon project. And I just don't think that's going to happen anymore because he is way too big now.
Well, and like I mentioned earlier, Brian Singer, Brian Fuller, I'm not behind them having it, but Seth MacFarlane's also expressed interest.
Fuck that guy!
Really?
I'm
not behind him. He's going
to
ruin it.
I would have to see a treatment before I...
I'm probably the only Family Guy fan among the four of us, it sounds like.
I like Family Guy, but he's only good for animation. He's not good for... I would like to see them use some previously, you know, like Frakes or, you know, something that had to do with Star Trek and you know, New Roddenberry's vision. You know, somebody like that should take it on, not, you know, Berman or any of these other, you know, douches like Fuller or, you know, MacFarlane.
Say, Ted comes out soon. That'll be the...
That'll be the tail of the tape right there. But now...
Well, he's also rebooting Cosmos, so keep that in mind.
And the Flintstones.
He has his fingers in many nefarious pies.
I'm just going to say, if I receive a treatment from Seth MacFarlane, hey, look, it's new free toilet paper. Fuck that guy. I am so sick of Family Guy, and it's an atrocity on television, the fact that the Cleveland Show is still on. That's a war crime against broadcast, I'm just saying.
I haven't watched it.
That's a walking racist joke.
Pretty much. It's like being, I don't know... It's terrible. I'll say something horribly offensive. Moving on. Okay. So your pitch, me playing evil TV executive. I like the idea that it's medical. House was really good. People seemed to like Grey's Anatomy. Okay. How do we appeal to the women demographic?
Hot doctor.
Okay.
Lieutenant Commander McDreamy.
I was going to say, okay, there you go. You might get that. Okay, so now you've kind of got your like female audience hooked. Okay, but I'm not sure I like this idea of traveling around. That sounds like it's going to cost me a lot of money. What are you guys going to do about that?
They're working on a space station.
That sounds like I have to build a lot of stuff.
Did they save any of those props from that big auction?
Maybe I will have to call somebody. Okay. I think that I honestly think what I just said, I think these are conversations that are going to come up too, because I honestly believe Star Trek is a very male dominated show. Well, they have had some very strong female leads, characters, etc., and some very good female directors on episodes. Yeah. I think depending, because I think women have a lot more power in how television is marketed now than they ever have in history. Like, I'm surprised a terribly written show like fucking Grey's Anatomy can last as long as it has.
Yeah.
And I think trying to get women into a sci-fi thing is going to be a thing. I really think it's going to become more... I've just got this feeling they're going to try and market it more towards women because it's a bunch of men on a ship. So their chances for sex appeal come up so much more often. And because we're seeing a lot more sex in television shows, at least the things that you see on cable... Like Game of Thrones. Breaking Bad, etc., and even The Walking Dead, you know, they're going to try and shoehorn that in there. So
a Star Trek series on HBO.
See, they have the budget. They can do the violence. Will they do the sex? And would that take away from Star Trek? Basically,
with green women.
That would be hot and awesome. But there comes a question. How far is your reboot willing to go? And that's going to be another question that would come up to a television executive. Because the idea of doing the medical thing is cool. But think about this. The medicine we see on television now is pretty graphic. I mean, you see them actually operating. In the future, we have laser scalpels. It's not going to be that graphic to begin with.
Didn't they cut back on that a bit? Like, they started on, I know on House, like, towards the beginning of the show's run, they spent a lot of money on that, but I think that they cut back on it because people get kind of squeamish about it. Is that...
I don't remember that actually having been decided, but I can, you know, looking back on it as, you know, I watched all the episodes as they came out, it does seem like there was a lessening of that.
So they basically found, like, other stuff for the CG team to do occasionally.
I mean, you still had things like, you know, the yellow eyes because their kidneys are failing and that kind of thing. It's stuff that's easier to do, but you didn't have, like, the, you know, exploding organs and eyeballs popping out and that kind of thing as much.
Though there was that just made me think of the one episode of TNG where the guy blew up. You guys know where he had the, like, parasite in him and they shot him with the phaser.
Yeah, it's like the end of season one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he blew up like scanner style too, didn't he?
the enemy within or something.
Yeah.
Where they had a creature that went in their neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
That was like the most Doctor Who like Star Trek episode, I think. Actually, old school Doctor Who
episodes I saw.
See, that's also going to bring up another thing too. They're going to look at contemporary sci-fi, and they are going to look at Doctor Who and start and permit, to a lesser extent, stuff like say Torchwood.
If they look at Doctor Who, they're going to see that one of the ways that they were able to reboot Doctor Who was to get him out of the room. I mean, if you go back and you look at old Doctor Who, you see that a lot of it was like a 60-minute show, and there's 52 minutes of it. They're standing around the TARDIS controls, and it's like, oh my god, this is so slow. Once they got them out for the reboot, that's when it started to really take off again.
Yeah.
So hopefully, people will take the risk. And like I said, I think that's going to be something that's going to go in Star Trek's may go against them is people like the ship.
Mm-hmm.
They like the static location, and I think a lot of television executives are going to be very squeamish, and I wonder if that's why CBS is saying no. But now we have examples of shows that have worked.
I'll tell you that, you know, I know that there's probably the main reason that Fox didn't offer up any new science fiction shows this time around is because they did spend a heck of a lot of money on Terra Nova. And they actually, instead of canceling it after the first two episodes or so, like they've been doing, they let it run the whole season. And I guess they just weren't satisfied with it at the end.
Which is unfortunate because I think the show had a lot of promise.
And it had some Star Trek people involved in it, in the production. Robert Moore, I believe.
Mm.
So maybe that's another reason why.
That's another reason that they're going to be like, I don't know about Star Trek. I mean, we had that one guy. We gave him a shot.
So I guess, gentlemen, as we start to wind down our conversation here, where does Star Trek need to go to become relevant again or to become back on television? What does it need? I mean, we've all talked about what we want it to be, but what does it need?
As much as I don't want to see it change from the formula that we're used to, like myself personally, if it were just a basic medical show, I wouldn't give a crap. I wouldn't watch it. I'm very much a fan of the current style and formula before, you know, like from the 90s. But in any case, I think that there needs to be something that kind of has a hook for each generational age group. Like you guys were mentioning, like some of what the article has, maybe start them out in Starfleet Academy, but not spend 10 years doing it like Smallville.
Yeah.
And
follow that class.
Well, and follow that class, and then maybe some of them go to starships. And you don't focus on just one set ship. You focus on those select people, like maybe seven people that kind of like Friends in Space almost, but is bad.
So you could follow them,
like one of them could be, you know, a medical ship, and you know, you don't have to focus on the other characters one episode, and then maybe one of them got drafted into Section 31, one of them, you know, met up with Gary Seven or you know, to, you know, something like that, or an engineering corps, you know, something to kind of mix it up a bit, but not stay on the same ship.
But keep it all kind of in one central story.
Well, yeah, keep it intertwined in the story. Like, maybe they have to, you know, get certain people, you know, together for certain missions, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. But
much like Game of Thrones, you're following these, you know, central characters, but the whole story is going somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, they all play a little piece in the puzzle for the entire plot, but that's the only way I could see doing it and not... They would have to not do it with the Enterprise or any of that kind of stuff. You know, do like the USS Challenger, or, you know, or you know, Picard's ancestor, you know, something, you know, just they need to do something fresh. I can see the need to kind of attach to some of the old stuff, at least for, you know, fan purposes, to kind of flash us old-time fans of the series. But I think that's pretty much the only way they can go with it to kind of to loop the current generation.
All right. So, you two, what does Star Trek need?
I think more than anything, I mean, regardless of when you said it, what's going on, what the characters are about, you just really need to tell good stories.
Mm-hmm.
You tell good stories and people will watch them.
Yeah, it's going to have to be more than just Monster of the Week. You definitely, I mean, people are becoming accustomed, I think, to more intricate plots and following cast of characters through these interesting, challenging moments in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing Star Trek needs, and I think you hit it right there on the head, is it needs more serialized stuff that is not episodic so much. I'm not saying so much to the point where if you miss one episode, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, I mean, Doctor Who is a beautiful example of that. You mm-hmm. can watch several Doctor Who episodes in a row and enjoy that episode entirely for what it is. But if you're watching the whole season, you're going to pick up on these weird little things that are all connected. And then the season finale or so, everything kind of comes back around. And, you know, mm-hmm. that formula works really well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that works. Or if you take a show like, say, Breaking Bad, you need to see everything to see how it all gets together. While an individual episode is enjoyable, you get more of knowing what's happened previously. I think character development is something that really needs to be focused on, to make these people real.
Well, and part of the problem is we don't have good sci-fi writers out there anymore. I mean, yeah, you have the ones that were in the series before, but they're kind of, you know, they burn out all the ideas and everything. They need some fresh blood into it. You know, maybe get Orson Kurtzman behind it as the writing staff, because they're doing, for instance, they were doing Transformers Prime, and that's, you know, great. The first Star Trek film, that was great. You know, just get people like that as the showrunners, and then get other like-minded people in there to script not only good sci-fi stories, but along with a nice overarching plot and characters that actually matter.
Yeah.
So here's my final question to the group. What network does this?
HBO, wow. That sounds great.
I like that idea. They don't have any sci-fi, so there you go. That's their next four.
And I think HBO could actually, and I kind of agree with that, other than the fact that I don't have HBO.
you will get it, sir.
I probably wouldn't. I would just, I'm not giving it down. Yeah, so I could see that, because that not only would bring that demographic to HBO, but it would also give them more of a budget. Whereas if you're on Fox, CBS, NBC, CW, they're going to limit it. They're going to not give it a chance. It'll make it two episodes, and then they're going to shit can it. So, I mean, I can definitely see HBO taking it on.
Not to say that HBO hasn't canceled shows before they're over.
But those stations are notorious for letting shows go on two, three episodes and saying, okay, you're done. And not even giving it a chance to even really open up.
I agree. I think HBO would give it a good college effort.
I really hope, I think, yeah, it has to be a cable station, like an HBO or
a
Showtime. Yeah, premium. Or maybe look at what AMC's accomplished.
Well,
AMC has no sci-fi.
AMC.
Yeah.
They have, they have Comic Book Men. They have stuff, you know, for comic geeks. They have,
they're dipping their toe in the water of geekdom, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could definitely see Star Trek going there. I mean, you know, it could be owned by one station or one, station or organization, studio, whatever, and be sold to another one to be played on. So, I mean, I could see either HBO or AMC doing it. I just can't really see the other stations getting behind it.
Yeah, I don't think any of the traditional big ones like ABC, CBS, NBC, even the CW, they're not going to pick up on this. They've tried it. They did it, and it worked under the old broadcast medium, but I think we've grown to a point where I think it has to go that. I mean, I think episodes of this would sell so well on iTunes. You could support it partially through that alone.
Well, I mean, maybe have Netflix help produce it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're doing their own original content now as well, so.
Unfortunately, a lot of it's crap.
Yeah.
It sucks.
But if they could bring it to the Star Trek series, you know.
Kick it up a notch. That's their opportunity to save face.
Something to keep in mind, too, is that Star Trek is owned by Paramount.
Which is CBS.
Which is CBS, which is also, you know, WB, or the CW, which is, you know, so that, but it's Viacom more than anything.
Viacom, so, all of them, pretty much.
So, as long as, I think if they kept it within the Viacom reach, which I believe HBO is within the Viacom reach.
Well, I mean, the CW is owned by.
Yeah. Oh, they are.
So, I mean, they could throw it on there, too, because they've got all different kinds of shows. And if they had the appeal for women in younger generation, you know, teens or whatever in there somewhat, then I think that they could throw that on CW pretty well, too.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I think the big telling point will be what happens after Star Trek II. So yep. We just have to wait another year and probably another 2 years in development. So I'm predicting 2015, the return to the final frontier.
I could definitely see that just for the fact that I think that they might want to weigh it just after, like you said, the next film, just to kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, because they want to see how strong the brand is, not just through the movie ticket sales, but through other things. I mean,
it'll have been 4 years since the last film. So, I mean, that if this gets the, you know, estimates that they're hoping for, then that might help cement it in their brain that yes, it is relevant.
Mm-hmm. I think the video game might play a big part into that as well.
Yeah, the one that's coming out by Namco. I think we're supposed to see it this year, aren't we?
I don't. That sounds right. I just know that it's tied in very closely to the development of the movie. So
I love Namco. I love Namco. I really do. They have produced some quality titles. I don't know if that's the publisher I would have went with.
Yeah, we'll see.
Activision would have been my first choice, truthfully. And I know you can say what you will about their Call of Duty bullshit, but look at Transformers, Fall of Cybertron. What a great revival of a brand. And Activision
true, but
held...
it's not really Activision.
Yeah, but Activision held the publishing rights to the Star Trek games for so long.
But look at their track record with them so far.
Yeah. It's... And I think Atari had them, but obviously it reverted after Cryptic Studios went, okay, we're done with this, with like Star Trek Online, which I get, like I said, I think that's going to be a telling point too. They're going to say, are the young hip nerds into this? And they're going to look at subscriber numbers, or they're going to see how many active players there are, because that's another metric you use to measure something. But that's the PR speak coming in there. But anyway, guys, we're going to wrap up this conversation. So big thanks to That Sci-Fi Guy and Nick for coming over. When's your next episode coming out, guys?
Soon. Yeah, very soon.
Putting the finishing touches on it right now. So
I am excited for this. So if people want to follow your work, where do they have to go?
Well, you could find me at www.thatscifiguy.com, or you can find me on thatguywiththeglasses.com.
Exciting stuff. Now, guys, one of the things I did want to pimp out to this, and I forgot to do this in the beginning of the episode, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and we'll play a few of your call-ins during our next show. We actually do have a call-in line, which I also use for This Week in Geek and the Game Heroes, and that call-in number is 817-717-7202. We do want to hear from you, from our fellow Starfleet members, whether you think it's a good idea for the next Star Trek TV series, like with our ideas. Is it too soon? Is it too late? Or has that ship simply sailed? Also, me and Steve, next show, we're going to be talking about the tech of Trek, the things that we actually have now that maybe existed in the minds of sci-fi writers, such as cell phones, tricorders, and even the Tupac hologram is one step towards photonic life form rights. God.
Tupac, back from the dead.
It'll be exciting to see. So for Future Imperfect, we have been
Steve Megatron Phillips.
That Sci-Fi Guy.
Nick Wright.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live long and prosper. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net, brought to you by SFI.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club.